Are we all right?
I got some stuff falling over here. Welcome to the show, number 228.
How is everyone doing?
I'm sure when this, if this lands on Podbean and Anchor and everything, you'll hear the gaps and you'll just be like, well, what's going on? They don't sound too pumped up. And it's because I don't know what's happening. So
this is our third time being on, in case people are wondering, like you said, because this will be what they do here. So they might wonder, why do we sound like that and talk monotone, at least at this beginning. We have no clue why we got knocked down twice in a row within the first, what was it, Tyler, 20 seconds for each time?
Yeah, I had a very upbeat, egotistical opening and you got shut down. But maybe they don't like my ego. Maybe that's what it is. YouTube just thinks I'm a bad guy. I almost said something.
I don't know. So I went ahead and removed graphics. I don't know if that's a problem. It's being very vague. You guys are kind of getting the same language that I'm getting on this end on your screens. There's been something going on constantly. I don't know what it is. So I'll message and figure out what's going on. I don't know if it's the titles. Couldn't have been that second time because I took all the other stuff away. So maybe it is something in the video. So, maybe it's Sally out to get me.
Yeah, I guess.
Who's Sally?
It was just a running gag from the first Masters of the Universe magazine. Yeah, because I was like, I don't even know if I should show what I bought. Well, people do in videos. I bought something at Dollar Tree. I don't know if this is any good, but it's some kind of like, it's Batman Unlimited Animal Instincts movie, but it came with a free toy. But it was a buck at Dollar Tree. I figured, you can't beat that for a buck, so I'll have to watch that tomorrow. I got it the other day, because I was going to just say that, but it's like there's no enthusiasm to say, look what I got for a buck. It's like, but yeah, so there.
Well, so far so good. We've been going about a couple minutes now, so that's a new record for the night.
Yeah.
I'm already getting some stuff in the chat of like some theories that they're having. I'm kind of falling in line with, I think it's still with the YouTube moderation being sort of automatic right now because COVID and they're, you know, not having as many people. I don't know.
Yeah, because I have no clue what it'd be. We're such a small channel that it makes no sense that YouTube would just be watching us. It makes me think, is there somebody that's disgruntled out there just saying, hey, let's just report them anything? Because it makes no sense.
Could be, but I want to stress that I have restricted this, and probably going forward, I will restrict it to 18 and over. Just in case the language is an issue, that it's because I clicked on that, and then we say something, I don't know. It's great. But anyway, you can't see it in the title because I'm too afraid to do it, but we got a handful of topics tonight. We got two comics that we're going to talk about. I don't think I'm going to show them. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. And then we have a character discussion that we're going to do on Karg. So where do you guys want to start off with? I'm kind of like at a loss for everything.
I feel like I'm standing in the middle of the road with like four directions and like I don't know where to turn. Like I'm just kind of like, I'll just sit here in the middle of the road and hopefully someone will come by and pick me up and tell me where I need to go. I feel like the wind's just taken out of our sails now. Like we're just kind of floating aimlessly in the water right now.
Yeah, because the
which
stuff
sucks
you're
for people
showing
listening
is
to this live.
Yeah, and for like when we would show the comic, I mean, that's all from years ago. It's under fair use. There should be no issue with that. So I wouldn't understand if there'd be a problem of showing comics from way in the past 30 years ago, over 30 years ago.
I don't know. And the other comic is a German comic that's been translated. So like I wouldn't think that there would be an issue there.
No, it shouldn't be. Like I said, one's a 30-year-old, the other is, well, not that old, you know, maybe 18 years old or whatever. But either way, it's like, it's under fair use. I wouldn't understand why that would be a problem of showing either of those comics. But like I said, maybe it was because it wasn't age-restricted checkmark. Maybe there was a word used that somebody said, okay, we can't be having that no more. Watch them. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's really annoying.
Well, let's try to start with the German comic because I don't see any issue with that. Like I said, it's over 30 some years ago. It's from Germany. My God, so nobody's making money off this. It's not about.
I like how when Joe's over there taking a drink, he's like,
I get so irritated. But I'd say let's start off with this.
It's kind of like Dark Helmet sipping coffee and Spaceballs, you know?
I remember that. Yeah.
I'll give it a shot. So we'll see how this goes. Your move, YouTube.
Yeah.
All right, Day of the Wrathful Skulls. This was I had this.
Who translated? Was it translated with Dushin? Didn't Grimbot do the translating and then cleaning up the pictures and doing the word bubbles and with Danielle?
I'm going to go ahead and read you the post from Danielle. Unholy necromancy, undead skeletons, defiled spirits of the heretic priest, summoned from hell. Oh yes, yes indeed. Horrors abound in this English translation of the German interpart Condor comic book story, Day of the Wrathful Skulls. So the writer was Willifred A. Harry. Artist is Michael Goetze. This is one thing I learned. Never have me pronounce people's names. The people in the chat, the people like trying to win things that were given away, like people's, I butchered those. I'm trying to censor myself now.
Hey,
thanks.
Hey, you should be able to say words. If we're for an adult audience, we should not be limited to what we say, at least in terms of language. Yeah. Shit.
There you go.
You're a movie, YouTube.
German to English translations, by the amazingly awesome Gunnar Sadlowski. Yeah. Transposition of English text into the word balloons and page restorations from Dusen. And then she did the edits and revisions to the once it was translated. So thank you guys for doing this. And this was kind of refreshing, really dark.
At least this one held your attention more than the others so far that we read. And, I mean, speaking of things about cussing, I don't think I've heard hell used more times in a comic than I have for this. I was like, they must have said it more than I say other words all the time. But it was different. I mean, like I said, sure, would I expected a little more action or something to have happened? Sure, but it was different. I was like, at least there was a story, and it felt like it was somewhat cohesive. While parts, like I said, seemed like they could have been better, it was something, so it was it wasn't letdowns like the other ones, especially like the one where I was hoping, hey, Zodak's going to have a great role, we're going to see something amazing, and nothing, so it was different, and believe it or not, I finally read this today. This was the first time I read it, so it
I read it a couple days ago, and I sent it to Tyler a couple days ago, and I know that I would like to think that Tyler enjoyed this quite a bit, even though it was sort of short and there wasn't a lot of fighting, but what we did get to see I thought was pretty great.
It was okay.
I thought you would have liked it more, just with the.
Nah, but I feel like when we cover these you know, forgotten, lost little stories, you know, when we label them, it's like, oh man, what's this gonna be about? And we're like, man, this just is like a fart right now. Like, but I mean, this one was better. But it, you know, it was fine. You know, it wasn't like, you know, a waste or. Boy, that really sucked. Like, it was fine. I kind of figured that Nathan was, like, expecting me to, like, really enter on if he verified it. Like, I was going to be like, oh, man!
Well, I mean, going into all of these, I never go in with the expectation of to be blown away, because obviously it's shorter than other mini-comic stories to begin with. But I just thought the idea behind Skeletor just summoning from hell to make like skeleton warriors to go and do battle, I thought was a neat idea. And I thought it was, I think Joe probably didn't like it that much because Stratos is in it.
No. You know, what's funny is like how I could hear it in Tyler's voice, and it's almost what he was saying is how I was saying it earlier. I mean, this definitely had potential and a start, at least the story of something cohesive and what they were trying made sense, but it's just like there was something missing to make it get that impact, you know?
Well, so for one thing, the skeletons are not much of a threat. They're just skeletons that get crushed and they just come back together, and that's really about it. Yeah. Like, I almost thought, like, in reading it, it's like someone watched Jason the Argonauts and was like, I want to put this in He-Man. Like, that works great for me. Skeletor summoning an army of the dead to fight He-Man. Like, yeah, that's a winning idea. And where they come from, you know, evil, ancient evil warriors that were pretty much doomed to a torturous existence, I think that's all a great idea, but you know, I feel like a lot of these stories, even the ones we've done before where they suck balls, they're biting off more than they can chew. They're trying to tell a really epic story in just a couple of panels, and you just kind of feel like it's lacking punch. It's throwing punches, but they're not really landing. Right. You know, it's I can't say, like, you know, you guys need to go check this out. But it was fine. This little story, it's fine. The artwork is good. I genuinely like the artwork in it. But and I'm sure that there are stories out there that we have yet to cover that I have never heard of that probably are really good too. But I'm a snob for artwork. If your artwork sucks, I'm gonna have a hard time giving you a fair shot. However, the art was good in this. You know, when Joe suggests reading one of those. Really, is it Lady Bird that Joe's maybe sit through with the bad narration and it's
that was one of the Lady Bird books with the audio that we had. Yeah, that one was interesting.
Yeah, he's had me sit through two of those, and I know like the British like love the stories, but I'm like, these are not very good stories. The artwork's not very good. The story's just But I know a lot of it's because I didn't grow up with that stuff, but. There's a lot of good things I did grow up with, like the anti-attorney He-Man idea and various other things. So it's okay. The story's okay. It's just a long-winded. It's just, you know, I mean, I can't fake my reaction to it. I just find it to be okay.
I felt like the dialogue, Tyler, I don't know if you agree, it seemed repetitive at times, very repetitive.
Well, they were really all about repeating that these skeletons were from hell. You know, it's like, well, I get it, but they're just skeletons. Like, there was nothing, it didn't look like there were skeletons from the Black Cauldron, you know, where they're just, they have, you know, I know they can't get graphic with it, but they could have at least had helmets with horns and a sword and shield. Or something. It was just they were just kind of regular skeletons. Just, you know, all right, we're gonna go take the palace.
Like the idea of like Triclops like transferring the energy to like make them stronger or anything like that.
Anytime Triclops is used, I'm like, okay, you get a lot of A+ points for that. But I thought, like, Skeletor is, like, the image they're trying to paint, I guess, is, like, he's, like, commanding, you know, from his, and then it just kind of layers it up in the illustration that Triclops is below. But I almost felt like it was saying that Skeletor was transferring energy to Triclops to transfer to the skeletons. And maybe that's just because of the translation, I'm not sure. But I kind of felt like Skeletor's power alone, like the spell he puts on to bring them back, makes them indestructible until the gates are destroyed. Right. Like, if their power comes from the gates that He-Man decides he's got to go destroy, then they're... So it kind of made Triclops' spot kind of redundant, almost. Like not really necessary. I don't know. It's not a bad story. And if I'm picking stuff apart, I guess I'm just being... I'm not trying to be snobbish about it or something like that. I just, when it comes to He-Man, I really don't feel like I gotta be, you know, I have to give a compliment sandwich to stuff. If it sucks, it sucks. If it's good, it's good. And if it's okay, it's okay. Yeah. And this story is okay. It's not terrible. The artwork is good. It's a good idea. It's just, and it's because the stories are so short. But even if it was short, I kind of feel like these warriors, and I think it would have helped had they just been given a few more extra details. You know, some weapons, some ancient armor on their bodies to show that these were some vicious people, and they look even more freaky and scarier now that they've risen from the dead. It's got some good
I like
ideas,
the idea
though.
That they were feet. I liked how they were feeding off of He-Man's power. The thought of that, I was like, okay, this is interesting. Something could happen. But like you said, it just there wasn't enough payoff. I mean, again, you're right. The art is great in this, and I think it's the one thing that saved it from me maybe really losing my attention, because if a story is getting a little too convoluted or a little slow-paced, I usually start losing interest. But if somehow something can still be a little eye candy to you and keep you going, like, all right. So I looked at it, I was like, this is good. And it does have, like I said, a good basis of a story, just maybe not enough in it. And like you said, that's probably because of the restrictions of how long certain of these comics could be. And I think if they had a couple more pages, they could have fleshed out a little more. So, I mean, out of all the ones that we've read so
this
far,
one
that
should
they
have
translated.
Been a multi-parter. Like, this is one that needed to have like three parts.
Could have been
like,
cool. If this had a two-parter or something, I agree. But, I mean, but to be honest, though, out of all the ones we read, this is the best so far. And it is. Yes. It's a fun story. Just like you said, I mean, it's not a grand epic comic or mini comic, but I mean, it definitely beats out stuff like Leech's mini comic and Mantenna's and
subtle
shit. So yeah, so it was fun, but yeah, it could have had more. But I am very thankful for everybody that was involved with Danielle and Grimbot and everybody did this. It's cool of them to do that because they're giving just Masters fans more stuff to read. Whether you said, you know, whether they might be hit or misses, this is still great on their part, and I applaud them and thank them for that.
Well, to me, this is easily the best of the translated comics that we've done so far.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, it was definitely better than that really lousy newspaper strip book that we read the last one when Danielle was on with us, and it was like, oh my god, no more of this chronological order bullshit. Like, we're not sitting through every one of these stories.
Oh, and I had no idea when we hit that. I was like, wow. I mean, everyone's like, wow, and even Danielle, like, Jesus God, that was bad. That one's bad. I don't even know what the next one's like.
I don't care about Joe's obsession. Like, we need to go in order here, people. Like, no more. There will be no more order on this podcast. It is strictly the best of the best until unless we break our rules. Where we, you know, we've said something and we were, all right, this is our punishment. Like, it's we're only going to get people the good stuff unless we get like
or it's a week that you're not on. Then I'm more than happy to tackle the bad stuff with Joe.
Oh yeah, and why would you guys make the listeners sit through that? Like, when I'm not here, then you guys are like, here, let's read some really shitty DC. Because
it's fun.
Be great.
It's fun. It's like when we did the magazine and we went through it page by page, and we got to see all of Joe's like clamful.
Leave me
clamful,
alone.
And we got.
I just had a problem writing a W that day for some reason, and did it.
And then we got to see like how he doesn't know how mazes work. That was pretty good.
Oops. Yeah.
So we just kind of exposed Joe for, being tomfoolery.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think with this, I'm going to rate it just a little bit higher than what you guys did. I thought it was fine. A little wordy, sure, but as Joe said, like the visuals themselves, I think, are enough to kind of make you look past just the word vomit that kind of takes up some of the pages.
And I mean, I think for a lot of us too, like some of you don't, because some of you like the DC stuff, and clearly you don't have high standards for Master of the Universe. And if it insults you, good. I just have a different standard when it comes for He-Man too. Like if people who listen to this and they say, as we've said before, we don't like the new stuff. Well, it's because we expect more. If people are going to be put in charge of this stuff, we expect great stories, even from the past, you know, which is why we tear apart the Leech and the Mantenna comic, the Cosmic Key mini comic. They're not good. The artwork's terrible. The stories are worse. You know, it's, and I think anybody, whatever the property, you know, that you are the most passionate about, from Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel, DC, Turtles, like, you want the best, and you shouldn't have to settle. So, you know, it's we're not doing this to, because there's some podcasts I listen to where they'll mock everything they cover. I'm like, do you guys even like this stuff? Because you're making fun of everything. Like,
yeah,
not in a fun way. It's like you're either embarrassed to talk about it, or you just think you're funny because you want to shit on.
I don't.
But
maybe part of that is just they think it's a good idea. I don't know, man.
And that's why I don't like to do bad stuff on this podcast. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm sure we'll have to have all three of us cover, you know, did we ever do we did the Mantenna mini comic with Nathan on here,
no.
Did we? I mean, because we didn't do it just to me and Joe, or have
I
we not?
I,
Well, I know we've...
I don't think so.
But I don't think with Nathan.
Or was it the Leech mini-comet that we went back and recovered with Nathan?
I don't know.
I don't even know if Leech... I'll be honest, I don't know if Nathan joined us for either.
I don't think
of those.
I did.
We covered them both, but I don't know if...
When we covered the Leech one years ago, like, it was just me and Joe, but... I mean, like, I don't get excited to voluntarily talk about bad stories or bad comics or bad episodes.
I know.
Like, that's just not fun
for me. I know.
That's why
we do them on the weeks that you're not here. I'm more than happy to take that bullet. That's fine. You know me. I'll read any bad thing or watch bad stuff.
Nathan, in his spare time, we'll watch some of the worst of the worst. And, you know, I think Joe does, too. Sometimes, like, Steven Seagal's The Patriot.
No, come on.
You know? Yeah.
We already had a hard time getting the show going tonight. Don't you go doing that.
We're good.
Yeah. The podcast is over, flips over the table, he's gone.
You know. Oh, shit. Shoot. All right. Yeah, well, what do you want to do next? Do you want to get into the MVC comic or do Kark?
I'll leave that up to Tyler.
All right. I was going to say, throw it out. 30 seconds. People in the chat room can decide for us. What do you want? You want to talk Kark? You want to talk the Faceless One comic book?
Okay, so I'll sip on some water while
we'll mix it up a little
give
bit
them
here.
Some time. It kind of bums me out if I really have to just like playing down the visuals on the show now, especially after I like worked on.
Well, yeah, because people were really it looked really good too. It may just be a fluke what we're going through. Just a pain in the ass, you know, and it just you know, people just have to deal with it for a couple of weeks, you know, and then it just kind of dies down and we're able to get back to normal.
Yeah,
so
we'll see how it goes.
So far, we got a couple Kargs, so we might as well
Karg.
All right, well, we'll move on with Karg.
All right, so Tyler, you picked the character of Karg that we're going to break down this week. What kind of influenced that decision?
We hadn't talked about him.
Fair enough.
That is it. That is it. You know, he's a character another one that we have not or were ever given anything on virtually. So unless you observe his behavior in the live action film or his appearance in the motion picture comic book or one of the issues from the magazine.
I was actually going to hit him with the facts. If you want to find Karg, you can look in the issue 11 of the Master Universe magazine. Blast from the Past is the story that Karg is in, which I actually read. It's a short little thing, but it's a really cool short story because you have all those T-Rexes that Skeletor's got. They're firing on Grayskull.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see Clampchap and Snoutspout kind of hanging out there, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And you can also find Karg in the motion picture Star comic from Marvel, which you guys have covered that in the past, right?
Yeah, we did. I believe we did that.
I think we did cover that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Do you think that would work down the road to do like a compare and contrast from what the motion picture comic book adaptation and the movie?
Compare. Yeah, I mean, we could do that because the comic book is based on a bit of an earlier version of the script.
Yeah.
You know,
especially with the bulk of
the scripts there, but there's some drastic differences that were in earlier scripts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can do that
down the
road.
Sure.
Yeah, hands down. Yeah, I mean, hands down, though, his best depiction is in the movie. I mean, that's no doubt. That's where we're introduced to him, and that's where we fell in love with him. I was obsessed thinking we were going to get that figure as a kid, too, and I was so upset that we never got it, and I didn't know if that was ever explained. I'm sure people have done interviews with people done the figures. Tyler, did they ever say, why didn't they even give us that figure?
I feel like we heard that. What Mattel chose. They chose Blade, they chose Gwildor, and I think they chose Sauron. Like, I think it's something that William Stout had touched on with us, so that's what they went with. That's the figures that they, or the characters they wanted to make toys out of. And that way they could continue to just keep selling Beastman, Skeletor, Evil Antilla, Man-at-Arms, He-Man, because they've already been made. So, well, you know, that's what they could make more toys out of.
He scared me. The only two people in the movie that genuinely scared me was the movie Beastman and Karg, because Karg looked so frightening. I mean, as amazing as Saul Rod is as looking as a character, I thought he was just badass looking. And same with Blade. Karg freaked me out, though. So I used to be obsessed with freaky characters, really wanting figures, but I like how he was in the movie, and I didn't see him as anything like as some kind of like simpleton or a dumbass lackey. I felt like he was doing his job pretty well.
Wait, who said that? Where did you hear that? Who said? I want to know.
When people would say Karg wasn't the main character that was doing anything, it was Blade, it was Sora. I was like, but Karg was leading them half the time. He was the one that's leading them, I thought, into these places. So I was like, why did anybody look at him like he was nothing? I never understood that.
Yeah, they're just a bunch of jack of asses.
And there was a lady that I used to work with that sort of looked like a cross between Karg and Nick Nolte's mugshot, you know?
Oh, yeah, my God.
Yeah. If I would have thought about this beforehand, I could have been mean and just found, like, because I think she's on Facebook. I could have saved a picture of her and put it.
Oh, well, you don't want to do that.
Post it on the screen of Nick Nolte's mugshot in this lady. Yeah. Just don't post her name. That way she's safe. Yeah.
I mean, I know it's kind of mean, but every time, like, I was at work and, like, what I did was ride around basically on a cart, like, hauling stuff. And each time I passed her, I was like, she just looks so damn familiar. And then that mugshot popped in my head. And I was like, it kind of looks like Karg, too, in a way. It was.
Don't put
it
up the thought we mean that was public.
I bet it was public harassment. Yeah. Got really big. Yeah, hair, it was like big.
It was
white
the
hair,
and where Tyler and I live, there are a handful of the population that still haven't left 1983, so they still have like the teased hair that they're still just killing the ozone with
their, using the Aquanet.
With the Aquanet.
You got some mullet people there too. Got people with mullets too. Some guys.
Yeah. Yeah,
you do see it on occasion. Yeah.
I always try my best to like sneak a picture if there's like a really good one. This one guy going into Food Line one time had one that was like the back of it was down to his ass. It was like Billy Ray Cyrus levels of
your God.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, Jesus. Stonewashed jeans, tore up and all that stuff. Still expecting arcades and Pac-Man to be there.
Hey, I wish.
Like some little town where you're at.
I mean, some of that stuff I wish people were still, you know, carrying around, you know. If girls wanted to wear like the shirts with like cut off like around their shoulders and big hair and stuff like that, the sweater shirts and all that stuff. I mean, I mean, when it comes to the women of the 80s, I'm like, some of that stuff, I'm like, you can do that, you know, the crisp hair and all that stuff. It's pretty hot, dude.
Remember when the guys, when we had our cut off shirts that we
no, I didn't do that either.
Hold on here, we had the guys, dear God, it was so fucking silly.
I think I remember you talking about that when we were, I think it was when we were talking about Last Dragon or something, and you were talking about you and the other guys in the neighborhood were wearing, like, those cut-off shorts and hanging around, and, what a time to be alive. No, Tyler and I were too young to wear cut-off shirts. My mom wouldn't have done that. She would have rather had me wear, like, the neon shirt with like the iguanas on it. What was the name of that brand? Like iguana?
I was wearing a lot of neon in the early 90s and acid wash during that time.
Yeah. But yeah, Joe, Tyler and I totally missed the boat on like the cool teenage hip 80s clothing style.
Yeah, some of the stuff hip was
did that
fun,
actually
some,
work?
Yeah, different
were like girls coming up to you guys on you're so hot. I love seeing your stomach hanging out. Like, is that.
No, that was just the thing. It was the fad back then. It was what people did. Weird. You just did it. So it was like commonplace. But yeah, you look back at something like, oh God, I couldn't imagine doing that again. But as Tyler said, yeah, the girls with pretty much, they can go back and do that, and that would be just fine. That would be fine to see. But Jesus, talk about sidetracking. That was one of our side rants while we're talking about Karg. But oh shoot, I don't know if we'll ever see him in comics again. I would love to, but I couldn't picture how they'd do it. I don't know if they would give him any true respect if they'd make him
shoehorn him in, like just here he is on this one panel in this one shot of this book. Oh, hey, there you go. Hey, we know what we're doing. That's what it would turn out to be. Just a little fun. I put that in quotation marks. Easter egg, and that would be it.
Yeah, that they think they're doing a service to the fans because they watched the movie. Yeah. They threw this guy in there. Oh my God! Like, how did they do that? No, I mean hell. If you watch, there's a vintage like 5 or 10 minute featurette of the live action movie on YouTube, like of like while they were making the film or before it was released. This was, I guess, came on TV. And Gary Goddard, the director, like says, kind of gives his description of like Karg, and just talks about a bat creature with torturous dental devices. And hearing that description of Karg made me think, maybe Karg is like an interrogator, like a torturous interrogator. Like, you know, instead of just you having Beastman like maul someone to death, have someone like, you know, like strapped down or something like that. And Karg has got like the hook and small knives and could just start torturing this soul to get information out, you know, or just do it because he enjoys doing it. You know, like, I'm like, that's a really interesting idea for a character. Like, that's not what was pushed, but I just thought, like, that's something, like, Skeletor doesn't have an interrogator. Outside of the collar that's used in the live-action movie that Evil-Lyn puts on Kevin, or that Blade puts on and Evil-Lyn uses, like, why couldn't Karg, like, use those, like, small knives and things that he's got and just start, like, cutting away, like, the webbing of somebody's fingers or, you know, start... I just feel like that'd be really kind of cool and very devilish of Skeletor to, like, bring this guy in to just torture people. Like a
I never heard about the bat thing. Almost. Like, yeah, because I didn't see the special you were talking about. But, yeah, because, I mean, isn't there even ears within his hair that you can see at times, correct?
As a kid, I didn't know what he was because his ears are not prominent in a lot of the shots. Like, at least right. Watching it on VHS... You know, you don't see as much or notice as much. And it wasn't, I mean, because his face, I didn't notice the bat nose. His teeth, like the first shot when they break into Gwildor's little cave house, and his teeth looked like they were, his gums looked like they were bleeding to me as a kid. And I always would kind of get nervous, like when that shot would come up when it says, tear this place apart.
So he freaked you out too, bleeding. Yeah.
yeah, he did. And it was because of that shot. And when he comes after Julie and says, I've got you, my pretty, I thought was creepy because I was scared for her. But the way he was charging at her, I thought was creepy. So of all the evil warriors in the movie, he was my least favorite, but I found him to be the most scary as well. And yeah. I grew to love him more as I got older. And I just felt like, so many of these other characters, they're not given much. And too many morons are put in charge of this property and don't know what to do because they don't know how to write. A good He-Man, so they could write a great Green Lantern story. I don't know, and I don't care.
Probably not.
I'm just saying, like, if they're just doing this because, all right, well, if I do this, maybe then maybe DC would give me the book that I really want to work on.
All right, well, I'll toss this to you because you're talking about being sort of like torturing people. It off the top of your head, if you were to make like a little mini comic that focused solely on Karg. Mm-hmm. Could you whip up a story real quick in your head of like,
I do it right now. That there is a small farm village, you know, a rather large size that is rumored to have a small artifact that could that Skeletor craves. It leads to an even bigger idea, like a lost treasure, a weapon of some kind. But it's held secret in this village. Kind of helps. It's like this village over the years was kind of entrusted to take care of this small amulet. Like no matter what, you keep this buried, hidden in this village. That's what's kind of helped this village prosper. It's like their own
good luck charm kind of thing. Like it's like a
that or responsibility. It's been passed down, and Skeletor becomes of its whereabouts. So he dispatches Karg. Doesn't know where it's at. You find out where it's at by any means necessary. And take some troops, hover robots, maybe an evil warrior or two. Not a big thing because it's about emphasizing that Karg can get the job done by torture. And if it was done in a mini comic, he goes in, he starts going after the elderly, threatens to torture children. We don't see it; it's just implied. And he takes, grabs a hold of somebody, somebody's father. And you can hear the screams and the howls coming from one of the huts, and the villagers are stuck, like not being able to do anything. The sorceress knows about the sends He-Man out there, and it's just playing up the terror that Karg doesn't have to be a big brute or use magic. He just knows how to torture people with his little devices and things like that. You know, just I think of Samir in True Lies. That they kind of implied that this guy is going to give Arnold the truth serum And when they come back, he's got all these like medical devices. He's going to torture Arnold and Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, think of that. You know, all these little things. He's going to torture all these poor, helpless people to find out where this little amulet is, and somewhere hidden in this village. And Heyman has got to come in there, kick everyone's ass, and run Karg off.
Would you have anybody go with He-Man? Because I know you said Karg was going to have a couple evil warriors with him. Not nothing.
Yeah, I'd probably throw in someone who was probably, you know, like Clamp Champ, because I imagine this would have been an 87. Like, I kind of play it up based on the release. Like, Karg came out in 87 in the movie, so therefore I'd have, you know, maybe Cyclone, you know, because they were using some of the, you know, 85, 86, you know, Clan Champ, Cyclone, maybe, or just keep it a little bit more grounded, like Clan Champ and He-Man, or Rio Blast and He-Man, or something like that. Rio Blast takes out the robot troops, and He-Man goes after Karg, kind of thing, or something like that. Keep it minimal. You don't have to get crazy with it, because I really just want to emphasize Karg, like make this all about how bad Karg is. And another thing is he's an ass kisser. Every time we see Karg like around Skeletor and Alien, he is kissing their ass or making up excuses. Like that kind of is like the David Spade of Evil Warriors. Like I think if like his character like in Coneheads or in Tommy Boy, where he's just out to like make himself look good. Like, he doesn't care what lies he has to spin. He likes to tell Evil-Lyn, oh well, we didn't stand a chance here. You know, or he's groveling at Skeletor, like, please, you know, making up excuses, like, because he's just the kiss. He is that character that archetype you see in a lot of movies and TV shows, comic books or whatever, that just grovels immediately, just gives in and begs for mercy, but will say whatever his lord or boss wants to hear. You know, you guys know that type. People who listen, you know the type. Just that sniveling coward, but wants to take credit for everything. You know, wants to say I'm responsible that we found this. You know, and you see that in the movie, like when he finds the newspaper clipping, and he's so high, he's smiling big when Evil-Lyn says this proves useful, and when they go outside, he tries to take the paper back from Blade, and Blade jerks it away from him, like he doesn't respect Karg at all. Like the small little moments that. Maybe we're not a big deal, but I've watched that movie. You guys know, God knows how many times. Only God himself knows how many times I've watched it.
It's got its own wing in the Tyler's Movie Hall of Fame.
It does. Yeah. It does.
He doesn't place it in the top five. He doesn't do that.
It's above Predator. It's above Jaws, Batman, Ghostbusters, Rambo, Rocky, Karate Kid, Wizard of Oz. It's above all that.
Why did you have to bring up Rocky? Because just before this podcast started and I was coming upstairs, I had that damn Rocky 5 because they had a marathon. I hate Rocky 5. And I was like, God, I'm so glad I'm going to see
Rocky. I'm acknowledging 1, 2, 3, 4, Rocky Balboa.
Yeah,
I think it's a
general.
It's your ball game,
it's
Joe.
A general understanding.
No, it's just a coincidence. It's a. Coincidence that he mentioned Rocky, and as I was coming upstairs, they had that Rocky 5.
When I say Rocky in my top 10, I say Rocky 2, because that is my favorite Rocky film. It's the second one. But
I just wonder why he got dumber. That's what pissed me off. See, Rocky, when you've seen him in 3 and 4, more sophisticated, obviously a little more, you know, like, you know, he's more well off, but he's speaking properly,
Joe,
and better.
It's called getting punched in the face
money.
All the time. That does that.
But when he loses his money, he gets sent back to the old neighborhood. Now he's talking like he's back in part 1 and 2.
I didn't like it at all because I felt like he's trying too hard to be. That's not how it works, and he wasn't
exactly.
Doing a very
Joe,
good job.
Exactly, Joe, be nuts.
Of,
God,
like,
I hate five.
It was, yeah.
I haven't seen five since it first was out years ago. I never watched it since, and I heard it coming upstairs, like, oh, there we go.
Yeah,
Let's start the show.
It's a general understanding that people just leave Rocky V totally out of the series. But yeah.
Let's get to another comic.
Well, before we move on to that, going back to Karg, do you think. Because Tyler, when you're doing the whole thing on him with him always like groveling and wanting to kind of undermine but also like be the one that they recognize, do you think when that doesn't happen that's what makes him so menacing when he is torturing people? Like he's taking all that energy to torture to make that like a
almost like to play off that is like it's a position of power, right? For him, when he is torturing somebody, he is in charge. He's running the show. You answer to him. And doesn't matter who it is. Like, he gets off on being in charge. That's why he grovels to Skeletor. Because Not that he would pull a Starscream or a Beastman and threaten to betray Skeletor. Like, he knows better than that. But he idolizes a position of power. Anybody who's running the show, which is why, like, you know, he is so commanding with the Evil Warriors when they're chasing down Julie. Like, Blade is listening to him, like, and addresses him as Sir. Beastman, like, kind of, you know, he talks down to Beastman, you know, like, screaming and yelling at him. Which is kind of an interesting thing too, that Beastman, as big as he is, like, coward obeys, you know, authority. Just small little things I picked up that, you know, it's probably like Robert London, where it's like, you're digging too much into it here, kid, you know. But just things that I noticed that I'm like, you know what, that could be used to expand upon his right. character. Yeah, like, torturing people is like, I'm the leader now. Like, you know, it's all about, you know, you grovel to me now. You know, I think that makes for an interesting, you know, because we've seen people like threaten to want to usurp Skeletor, but this guy is something we didn't see in Filmation. We didn't see in the mini comics or really any other form of media that, you know, is an ass kisser like that, but also someone that wants power. And just having that torturous kind of, not mad scientist, but just an interrogator. You know, you think of, I don't know, I really can't come up with any other plausible characters from other. I think of, like, well, people don't like the character Crystal Ball from G.I. Joe, and I don't know why. Like, they think he's such a shitty character. I'm like, why? I don't know why that's. Hey, everyone shits on the 87. Well, like, Joe fans, I don't know what the problem is. I smack the hell out of all of them.
Well, there was something that was brought up in the chat by Sean. How do you think Karg lost his hand?
Oh, I'd say probably either due to failure or back talking to the wrong person, and that's what keeps him in check. You run your mouth too damn much, you're going to lose your other hand. So I dare say Skeletor may be the one that cut off his hand, like, as punishment. Because you think of this. In the live-action movie, the penalty for failure is death. So maybe the one time Karg failed, he realized this guy is good, but he cannot fail me again. Take his hand away. Maybe Blade's the one that did it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's... if we're keeping it all, yeah, you know, compacted there. But I never really thought about that, you know, like how he lost his hand. Because a lot of characters that have got hooks for hands, I just think it's really cool. And I don't think too much into it. But keeping up with the idea that he was a good man at one point, and he had a wife and child, and they were taken away, and they cut off his hand, and he turned to evil guy. Like, no. Yeah. He was a bad guy. He loved what he did, and he failed, and he lost his hand for failure.
Come on, Tyler. You gotta love the sympathetic villains. Oh, come on.
Well, maybe if DC decides to do the multiverse version of Karg, you know, in a 5-part miniseries, and we can have, like, the fatherly Karg, who's got a wife and child, and it'd be great, man. And in this universe, he's got pink hair, and in this one, he's got brown hair, and... You know, and he's related to Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
You know,
just... and that lady that I used to work with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, Joe, but, did you have any closing thoughts on Karg? I know you're already, like, ready to jump towards the comic, because I think Joe's just getting too hot now.
Oh, no. I am getting hot, but that's just how it is. No closing thoughts. Like I said, it was just a character, like I said, freaked me out as a kid. Always loved him, wanted a figure of him, enjoyed him in the movies, didn't get enough of him really in much media, like you said, the other types of comics, but it would be nice to see him in future stories, but done with some respect. So maybe one day, but it's going to be highly doubtful. But otherwise, he's a great character. I've always loved Karg.
I was glad we finally got him in a figure. Nothing else? You have nothing to dig into here?
No.
What did you have to say about Imp? Did you have a lot to say about Imp?
I babbled about him a while, yeah, unfortunately.
No, why is that? You can babble a lot about Imp, and I can't get nothing out of you for Karg. That's balance there.
Goddamn. I don't know. No, there's nothing really for me to add to it.
Imp sits on Hordak's shoulder, and you talk for 40 minutes about that?
That's crazy. And now we got the skulls back up.
You a whole bunch of feet off of me. You're like, excuse me.
Look at
them. I got nothing else to say here.
I have nothing. It's crazy.
And I you know what's it? By the way.
No, but no. Now we get to this comic.
I'm calling you out here, people in the chat room. If you feel like Joe should have had more to say about our card discussion, say it in the chat room, and we'll give you a nice parting gift or something like that too. So at least validate. Am I the only one who wishes Joe had something more to say here, other than drink water and burn?
Send him an autographed picture of myself or something.
Yes.
No, and now with this comic with the faceless one.
Oh, he ain't kidding. He's like, okay, moving on here.
This, you know what's weird? Were two different people that drew this comic, because I felt like I got a weird vibe, especially when it started when you seen King Hiss without the, you know, the helmet on, when he just had that kind of like little,
wait a
whatever.
Second, Joe. Dude, man, you just jump halfway into the book here. We don't even tell what we're talking about. Like, or anything like that. You just
oh, yeah, there's nothing to
in.
Say it down there no more. I forgot. Yeah, go ahead, Nathan. Tell us, tell everybody who's listening and watching what we're talking about.
Joe,
you
have a hot day here, because you're rushing through an awful lot of stuff here. And if so, I hope she's really hot.
we're talking about the MV Creations comic. It's from issue 5 from volume 3 that focuses mainly kind of on the how the Faceless One came to be. I didn't sit and read through like a lot of these comics. I remember, I think when we talked about the first issue from Volume 1, The Charge of Darkness, that I started to collect a few of those when they came out, and then I kind of just, I don't know how far I got into the run either. It wasn't like, it was probably like 8 to 10 issues, and then I just sort of stopped. But this kind of kept going on for a lot longer than I thought it did, so Tyler picked this. Why? What was the driving force behind this one?
I think overall, like it was always my favorite of the entire run of the NBC comics that we got. Power of Fear probably would rank up there too. Is like that was a top like top tier for like the first or the best.
You had to order you know, Power of Fear though, right? Since that was something.
No,
special.
I mean that was available in comic stores. Like. It was delayed for a while. I do remember.
Oh, am I thinking of the Dream Halloween, the one with Scarecrow?
Yeah,
which
that
was
the one you had to order.
Okay, that's okay. Okay, yeah,
that one and the like the Graham Cracker comic cover exclusives. That was like the throwback to Meteor Monsters and the Faker cover, where everyone was like a Faker.
Yeah, a lot
like
of those suckers didn't they? Those Graham Crackers pissed me off. I didn't know anything about them. So there's a lot
like,
I don't have.
I was so like. Scared to order anything online, like I didn't. Of course, this was I was like out of high school. I didn't have a credit card or anything like that. Debit cards, I don't think they were even a thing.
Yeah,
at the
they
time.
Were. Yeah,
or were,
like,
okay,
like,
well,
it was getting there. But this was around the time when you and I were still going and getting money orders to pay for stuff on eBay.
Yeah, eBay stuff. Yeah, and mainly.
God, how long that took too? Because you got to like mail that off. That probably takes you know, 3, 4, 5 days to get to them, and then they go and cash it, and then mail you your thing. So you're waiting like 2 weeks just to get stuff, and now it's like I ordered Stone Darn Rock on a Thursday, and it showed up yesterday. I was like, wow, okay,
wow,
yeah,
that's
it really was. Simpler times back then, but I think first I want to say what a dude does for his daughter, first of all, but the second thing I kind of want to bring up is, and it kind of ties into what we've been talking about this entire show about the DC Comics and just sort of their treatment of the property as a whole. We're looking here, this is the early 2000s, we have NYP that came out. And a lot of new ideas and new characters came out of these comics and NYP. So my question is, what did they do right here that they can't seem to do right anymore?
They treat the characters and the property respect. Yeah, they treat the characters and property with respect and from the source material they have. And they're not trying to go so far damn off and make it feel, again, like it's earthen-like. You feel like this is a whole nother world, but it's still, it's engaging. You love to hear the history of what is going on. Because like we've said before, does everything need an origin? No, but when things, you know, are done like this, it can work. And it is good to see. Now, and of course, they like doing Easter eggs because, you know, you could see, if I'm not mistaken, was that supposed to be Hero in the background with all
no,
the...
It is Hero.
Okay. It is Hero, which it's cool to see stuff like this. Now, I have not, I'll be honest, I have not read these since I first got them way back when. So that's why, I mean, I'll go in order to read after this because I just want to make sure I'm getting the storyline correct.
Wait a second. You made me sit through some of these goofy-ass Lady Bird books. You didn't have the decency to read this in advance?
No, I mean, I read it right before the show, but that's what I'm saying. I haven't read this stuff since those years ago, but which I'll have questions, which you can probably then answer because, like I said, I'll have to read the next issue of this maybe tomorrow, so it'll probably answer what I'm going to ask you anyways. But, okay, the storyline, it was starting to slightly confuse me because it seemed like this is taking place way back when, but then Eva Lynn's born, so I was like, but wait a second, would that just be 20 years later? Was she sent into the future?
No,
that's... Okay, all right. And then the other thing with Keldor, if I'm assuming that's Keldor who grabbed her as the baby, which it probably is, and says, I'll raise her as my own, but then I thought she falls in love with him, but he's raising her like a dog. I guess I got confused. I was like, what the fuck did I not see when I first read this the first time? Why am I seeing it now? Just something was confusing me timeline-wise, because I thought this was supposed to be way back when, all before He-Man, but I was like, but, well, then how old is she, and how is she still... I don't know. I guess the age and the timeline had me lost. And I was like, okay, probably I'll figure it out in the next issue. Was it explained, Tyler, or am I just...
No, none of this. This whole one story, this is why I like it, because even though it's connecting the current story with the Snake Man and Eva Lynn facing death, and it, once this story is over, it kind of carries on with that the running story of King Hiss trying to get erase Serpos back and keep Eva Lynn alive. This is just kind of taking that and threading in the backstory for the Faceless One, which was not given to us in the show. If Val and Emiliano talked to Larry about this stuff, I have no idea. As far as I know, this was all their original idea, which is why I felt like, you know, Hero and Eldor make cameos in this, but they don't, I think Eldor says one line, but they're not name-checked, and they don't focus at all on Hero because... they were given all those restrictions, like you can't use characters that we have not featured in this current cartoon or that are in the current toy line or that don't have rights to or whatever. I mean, I just know they were given so many restrictions out the ass. And it was only like certain characters they could use even with those restrictions too, which is why I liked it so much because they worked their way around those goofy-ass handcuffs that they were given. And they used the pre-attorney with like, it clearly looks like they're meeting in Central Tower. It's the Council of Elders that are with the Faceless One, or which we don't really aren't given a name to him. But yes, this takes place during pre-eternity. Keldor is the unnamed one because they refer to him as an unnamed ally. Like they're trying their best to work in connecting what we were going to be getting in the Powers of Grayskull line without Mattel jumping down their throats, because just like they did with the Power of Fear comic where they got in so much trouble for putting Scareglow in there. So this is the unnamed one. Keldor is taking Evelyn back to the future.
Oh, so they do. Oh, that's what I was saying earlier. So they do go to the future. Okay, then now I'm okay, because I was when I'm reading this, I was like, I hope they say it. Okay, good. The next issue. All right, because
the next issue. That story's done. There is no more with this. It's just, and I think it's because they didn't get to finish or go any further with the story. Because once
that was the plan,
up,
either way, was supposed to be them going to the future.
It would be way into the future. Yeah, this is ancient times, like when like the Powers of Grayskull stuff's going on. That's what we're looking at right here in this story.
Okay, that's why I was just really confused at points. But now that you said it, now it makes sense. And what's funny is, was it mentioned this one girl that's sitting there with like a little tiara and a red shirt? That's not supposed to be like a throw to the damn Star Child, is it?
I knew that was coming when you said that.
Is it?
I don't think so. Unless
I got a vibe. Emiliano, I got a vibe.
We have to ask Val, or even reach out to Emiliano and ask him that. I don't, and I kind of had that vibe too, but I'm like,
Okay.
That's such a hated load. I can't imagine Emiliano throwing that in there.
That would be something, though. It's weird, because I said it, you said it, we have not discussed this, so it's not like we've talked about it. So for both of us, they have the same vibe.
Well, the Star Child is like much smaller, whereas this girl looks like she's maybe 11 or 12.
Yeah.
But I do like the designs they came up with the Council of Elders. But yeah, it's just a really, it's a great way of tying in this character's connection to Skeletor, of how Skeletor got the Havoc Staff.
Yeah, I liked Skeletor it. Yeah. Said
that he serves somebody else, which I'm thinking at this time, is he still working with Hordak at the time? Like, he was taught some stuff, decides to go deep into the past to get some things, to thwart King Hiss, you know, claiming to be an ally of the Snake Men. All the while just kind of sets King Hiss up to fail ultimately on a grand scale, then go back to the future and decide to claim Eternia as his own, fails, gets injured, Hordak takes his face away. I don't know,
it makes sense. No, what you just said, that does make sense time-wise, like that could be the damn good possibility. And
Skeletor raising evil in, yes, I do say, like, maybe that's just a ploy to get him to give up the child so we can get the Havoc Staff. I will raise your child as my own, knowing full well he's not going to do that. Who knows who Evelyn is turned over to when...
He might have just gave her to somebody else in some little village or something to raise. Yeah, it's a possibility.
Maybe like a Willow. He's taking a piss and the brownie stole her, like with a bird or something.
Because wasn't she even like some kind of like thief and magician, how when we've seen her like in the NYB cartoon? So she could have been just raised by somebody else. Now, the other thing I didn't check and I should have checked is, I'm assuming it's Emiliano did the art, but I felt like in some parts it looked different. Meaning, like what I was saying when I really jumped the gun at the beginning, was when you first see King Hiss, and he doesn't have the crown, and he just had this like little like hooded thing and showing his whole face and his head, is like his bald head. But in the next panel, when he has the helmet on, when they're ready to do the spells and stuff, he even looks like his face is completely drawn different. So I guess my question is, were there a couple artists that worked on
something? There was two artists. It was Emiliano and I think Enza Fontana, I think, was the other artist.
Did you see that, or is it just me? Because the face of him, not only with just the different design when he put on the helmet.
I've got the comic.
Okay, look at it. I want you to see the face of him unhelmeted and helmeted, and you can see in his eyes, his nose, his mouth. It looks like two different artists completely. And I know that's not me just, you know, like pulling strings, saying, okay, Joe, you might be
tweaking. Yeah, his nose is drawn like very pointy. I didn't notice it. Yeah, you noticed something I did not pick up. If you look at hell, it's within the two pages.
Yeah, it's like without the helmet, more of a rounded off nose, and then like the other one, that's definitely way more of a point to it. So
yeah, much more evil looking. There was a goof there, at least a continuity error. It's not major, but Joe, you noticed it, so kudos to you on that one. But yeah, all this is because the faceless one to me was probably the best original character that came out of MYP above all of anything else. And a very interesting, intriguing character we didn't get much of. All the more reason why he's so interesting, and to kind of get an idea of like how he became the faceless one, I thought was pretty badass. Obviously we find out he's Evelyn's father in the episode Lessons, which is kind of a fun little, like, wow, like, that's pretty cool. We get a nice little nod to Evelyn's backstory. It's not grandiose. We see images of them, her as a little girl or some shit like that. I kind of like how this comic kind of paints it up. Like, if you take this in the animated series, we know very well Keldor did not raise this girl. Somebody else did. It's just a ploy to get the Havoc Staff is the only thing. Like, Hordak.
And I like how they're able to do it. They're able to, like, fill in gaps of, like you said, things we didn't get in the cartoon, but things that, you know, could work. And it's like, this makes sense. And it's what, you know, Nathan, when you were asking earlier, why did it work? I think it's because these are passionate fans who are working on this comic. They understand the property, whereas a lot of the stuff now, it's not by these fans that have the heart and the love for Masters like Val Emiliano did, and they make it work. You know, and that's why I'd love to see them come back.
It's not just that, too, but my question was, because it's hard to, especially well after the fact, take an established property and add new characters and still find a way to make it work. That's kind of what I was getting to the basis of, that they added a lot of new characters and fresh faces, between the comics and NYP. Yeah. And did like so? What is it? Just
I think it's because, like I said, almost like earlier, really, they get it. They understand the essence of Masters. They understand about like characters when they would have a name or whatever, matching either their abilities, their appearance, what's something they could do. But they really get it. They just don't create a character and say, this is Pawn Boxer. Right. It's like, what is a Pawn Boxer? Like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Or Scrom. What's Scrom? They understand. And so when they're writing it, they're just taking the history they've seen and loved so much, and they're just adding upon it. But it works because of the love. I can't stress enough. That's why I said you do need people that have a passion and love for these properties to keep them alive. If you just get an outside source of somebody that, I write comics, and I work on, like you guys were saying earlier, a Spider-Man, Green Lantern or something. It's like, do you know Masters? No, but I'm a writer, so I can do it. No, that's not it. That doesn't mean you're qualified to work for Masters of the Universe just because you're a writer. Like, you got to get some love.
It's kind of like Vince getting those shitty TV writers to write Raw and SmackDown every week. They don't know the base appeal of wrestling. They're like making it more convoluted than it ever needs to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. You're good.
The thing about Val and Emiliano is that they didn't come in here and try to shoehorn like their own like made up characters that they had since childhood, but no one gave a shit. So now I'm going to get him in here, you know, like some other people have done to He-Man. I know there was a character, an original character that they had. I forgot. It was a Gar character. Yeah. Illumina.
Illumina.
That they really want. I think it was Val's creation, and I think Emiliano illustrated, or maybe Val. I'm not sure.
Mattel didn't give the okay on that because it was a new original character.
It was a new original character, and it was even teased, and the kibosh was put on that. But what I'm trying to get is that they didn't come in and try to restructure Master of the Universe. Granted, Mattel was breathing down their throat, so it's not like they could, even if they wanted to. But because of this, they came in and wrote a lot of faithful stories that you could buy were part of NYP, or just keep them as a separate entity almost too if you didn't like the cartoon. And this is a prime example of them doing their absolute best of expanding on a character from the cartoon that we got virtually nothing on and tying it into the Powers of Grayskull, which I know Emiliano is a tremendous fan of that particular part of the mythology. Val, I hope you are too. I've ever heard Val talk too much about it in terms of his perception of it, but I'd assume he's pretty interested in that and likes it as much as Emiliano. But I know Emiliano loves it, and that's why I respected it so much, is that they found a way to work in nods to the Central Tower. Hero and Eldor are in there, with King Hiss being the common threat on Eternity, the unnamed one. And clearly it's Keldor. We know it, but it's there. They just don't say it because Mattel would have, filed a lawsuit. God knows what else, by little Scott Knightlick or something like that.
Yeah.
And also without a mocking, right. That's the other thing, Tyler, is they don't mock the property. That's what you unfortunately did with some of the recent stuff.
They're not trying to work in bad jokes and awkward silences because, look, it's a little pint-sized version of He-Man from the cartoon game. Let's all look at it. It'd be funny.
And put down existing characters.
Tyler, you mean looking up He-Man, all right? If you're gonna say his name, say it right.
Chipper He-Man or whatever.
Any kind of gratitude or respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely not. And just
is it Homecoming, Tyler? Is that the one that Emiliano did as Homecoming? Because I think that's one we should do on this episode sometime.
That's what introduced me to his artwork back when I was in high school. Was his project he did for college. It was an art project he did, and it's a long. It's I think it's like 22, 24 pages.
You'll see a label of love, definitely from that.
That too was like that was an original story that tied in She-Ra, New Adventures, the live action movie, and the original vintage canon, and it was a lot of fun, that comic. I remember I printed out that off our computer that we had at the time, but like scans of that, and pasted it on a comic book box that had all my He-Man comics in, from the Star Comics to NBC. just so I could look at it.
That's cool.
Like, this is how I want to decorate my He-Man comic box, is Emiliano's artwork from Homecoming, because I would go back and just look at the artwork on that. And there was nods to Filmation, the live-action movie. KO is in it. He comes back with He-Man from the New Adventures. Skeletor comes back, and he's kind of like a neutral character. He's not really a villain, but he's not a good guy either. King Hiss has married Teela. I mean,
we're going to discuss that maybe in a couple weeks, if you want. Maybe 2 weeks, because next week we have a special guest from James E. Top is going to be on discussing a very cool project.
I was going to, because he had a very interesting Facebook post today, and I was going to go ahead and read that, because we are going to have him on the show next week, and he can elaborate further.
Go ahead, but you read that, and just to let everybody know, this is an amazing issue. If you haven't read it, you can go to He-Man.org, and you can read it. Of course, you can order the sucker online on eBay, but amazing comic. And while Nathan's doing that, getting ready to read that up, you guys in the chat room, get your questions ready. You can pop them right here. We'll answer anything that you have for us, and I'll pass it to you, Nathan, so you can read up James' post. All right,
and then I'll also read the comments on last week's video. So James E. Talk made the post. It says Masters of the Universe 85, and it says here, what is Masters of the Universe 85? It's a new project from the minds of James E. Talk, Adam Moore, and the chat room's own Grimbot, Deucen. It will be free and unofficial, posted across social media on a weekly basis, and showcase the days when there were no evil uncles, no ponytail-based adventures in space, and no reboots. It will celebrate a time when He-Man and She-Ra were at the height of their popularity and fought the evil... machinations? Man, I gotta stop reading shit on this podcast, because I just can't read words. Of Skeletor, Hordak, King Hiss, and other assorted baddies. And maybe a few new ones. Look out for an announcement in the coming weeks, so I guess we can pry a little bit out of him next week when we have him on the show, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he's gonna discuss that. Might give some little exclusives on the show next week as well, so... We can't wait to have him. And he'll have some other things that we'll be discussing. But, James will be on next week, so that'll be a fun episode. Definitely.
And we're getting a new commentary with him, which I was denied last time.
Yep.
I have to have my commentaries with James.
And his episode that he chose is Horde Prime Takes a Holiday. That's going to be the episode he wants to do commentary for. All right.
Maybe my...
So I'll pass it to you, Nate.
Because I did also get a copy of that Dark Horse... where it goes through the animated series.
Which is awesome that Nathan picked that up.
So that should be here. So I'll watch that episode, read up on that, and maybe I can hang with everybody on the show. Let's see. Descendants of Grayskull, another fun-filled episode. I really enjoyed the magazine segment. Besides He-Man, I had the Britain's farm models and loved playing with Matchbox cars too, because we started talking about... there was a question brought up about like other things that we liked... property-wise, back in the day. Blue-haired lawyer, congrats to me on my purchase of the Palace Guards. Yeah, those came in this week, so I started shoving, working everything in on the shelf over there. And then Tyler wasn't here for this, but we read a comment on the previous one from Blue-haired lawyer about this young guy that basically said that like his childhood was way better than ours. Basically, the young guy I worked with told me that my childhood sucked and his was much better because he was a kid in the first decade of the 2000s. I assumed he was all hot and bothered about tech, cell phones,
what a pussy.
Computer games. So, yeah, I'm like, dude, sorry, man. You missed out on some good stuff. Because I feel like the last 20 years haven't had an identity to it. Like, told you... 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and you think about each decade sort of had its own title to it almost. Like, if I told you the 90s, automatically in your head you're already thinking about this. To me, and maybe it's just where all of us are getting older, but the last 20 years don't feel like they had a distinct anything. It just all sort of blended together.
Yeah, I've felt the same way too. Like, not in terms of movies, in terms of fashion. Everything is just about constantly changing technology, social media, who's a star now and who isn't anymore.
Yeah, well, what's Kim Kardashian up to? That's about it.
Yeah, it's just temporary, trendy bullshit. We don't have movie stars like stars. We have temporarily popular. And then no one gives a shit anymore, you know?
Flavor of the month, you could call it. That's all it is. It's just there and gone.
That is what the 2000s are, because nothing has a lasting impression. Everyone moves on to the next... I mean, even though they're still bringing back Transformers and Turtles and other things in various incarnations, they're still relying on the old stuff. But
oh yeah, they're trying to bring back the best decade, which is the
the '80s. It's just I've often felt too. The 2000s don't have an identity because it's constantly changing.
Yeah, I think, and it is the curse of what you said. All the reality shows, it's always one to another. All the technology, you go from one phone, and 6 months you got a new phone. Yeah. You got some new computer. You got there's nothing that lasts because it is. It's like instantaneous. I want this now. Okay, I'm done with that. It's like ADD. We cannot focus on one thing. We have to keep jumping and jumping. So yeah, there is nothing. That is why they bring back everything from the '80s because the '80s had some of the most amazing fun shit. It was the last good time for video games and cartoons and toys and all sorts of shit. I'm sorry. Nineties had some stuff.
Yeah, the last good time for video games, I would say, was probably the '90s. You can't just cut it off at the '80s, Joe. Because then,
eighties and get up a little nineties. But
I'd say most of the nineties, because at least halfway through, we're still dealing with Super Nintendo and Nintendo and Sega, and then mid-90s like PlayStation and all that stuff coming to effect. So
I'm throwing the '90s for games too. Yeah, I mean, I just guess for '80s. I always just think about cartoons, toys, and
towards the death of the arcades, though. You know, when everyone's like wanting to sit on their ass at home instead of going to the mall and risk it. All you got is a dollar, and that dollar decides whether or not you're going to make it all the way to Shao Kahn or Shinnok and Mortal Kombat 4 or something like that.
So all I needed was a quarter. I just needed a quarter.
Of course, maybe 50 cents.
Maybe 50 cents.
Joe's the kind of guy that goes over to the 10-year-old who just really wanted to play, puts his quarter in. Kicks his ass and is like, "All right, beat it, kid."
I could see Joe pulling some of that strong arm shit if he like came across us as kids playing that. He'd walk up to us and be like, "I'm gonna win at this game because I know exactly what I'm gonna do. If you walk your character right on this exact pixel, then you're impervious to any damage."
You said, "I want to talk because I got a Spider-Man jacket from a video game contest that I won years ago."
Could you even picture that of going in, like you said, playing any of the side-scrolling action games, and there's a little 7-8-year-old, and I'm saying, "Stand right here." I was like, "You little fucker!" I said, "Stand right there!" Just screaming at him. I don't know what to do.
He's like Eric and Billy Mass in that one three-legged contest. Get off! You're humiliating yourself! Get off!
He runs off. I take the rest of his quarters that he is sitting up right there on the machine. He's like, "That's 50 cents for me." Oh, what a rotten bunch of shit.
Like, I'm getting me some McDonald's French fries when I'm done tonight, man. Good night.
Hell yeah. There you go. Nathan, were there
more? Yeah, Blue, the guy you were talking to, he's a pussy. Tell him I said so.
Yeah, I could see Blue-Haired Lawyer like trying to track that kid down. Just be like, "Hey, yeah, this is what Tyler said." Anyway.
Yeah, and just say, "Tyler said this," and then walk away.
There's two more things that I'll read really quick. Stephen Brick, AFOL, "I've always wondered about the production numbers of Master Universe Classics. Do you guys have an idea of how many units were produced per figure?"
I know, from what I thought I heard towards the end of the run, it could have been between 5,000-6,000 for the figures for each one when they were doing the run towards the end. Thought maybe it was close 9 to 10 at the beginning, so... the numbers did drop, if I'm not mistaken. And that's not like, outing anybody or anything, because a lot of people have said this within the He-Man community. But I thought that's how it was. And if I'm wrong, I'm sure Grimbot or somebody will correct me. But thought it started around 10, then I thought it dropped around 6 towards the end of the line. So,
Tyler, you didn't pay that, much that attention to any of the production numbers on that stuff, did you?
No, I just remember how like Beastman sold out after a while, and with each figure they'd sell out faster, to the point where Mattel was like, if a figure was on still like available after 2 weeks, they thought it was a failure.
Which that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. But that was their, and I remember the chit chat. You know, I'm trying to remember which figure it was that didn't sell out because it got to where they were selling out instantaneously. I think it was Beastman, He-Man, Skeletor. And I can't remember if it was Stratos after that or around, because I remember heading into the summer, I think they announced Hero was coming and Merman. But I remember around the time when Roboto came out, it sold out really, really fast. And it's like,
I remember those instantaneous things. It was crazy. Yeah. Then you had to get the subs And that was basically the only way of getting most of the stuff. And I think that's when things would drop. Because remember, oh, this figure sold out. Then why the fuck do I see it at Big Lots 2-3 years later in droves? So we started finding out, okay, maybe they weren't – well, obviously, they weren't selling out like they said. But, yeah, so that's that shit, I guess. Yeah.
I can't say too much about it. That's about the only thing I can offer to that particular question, which was – it was just good to know they were selling out fast at the time because I was getting it no matter what. But –
And the last thing comes from Asari 4. That Puma, Cougar, Lion, or whatever it was story and calling the kiddo out made me laugh way more than it should have. Another great episode, guys. Always looking forward to new episodes. So appreciate you checking it out.
Appreciate
it. Yeah, that kid was probably definitely lying.
He is a liar. Yeah, definitely. All right, so was that the end of those questions? All right, well, Grandma in the chat room. Well, Grimbot has a first one that's just me and Nathan will have to cover quick. Question for Joe and Nathan. What did you guys think about the new characters in the last issue of Multiverse Comic and the reasoning for their insertion? And what he's referring to is, well, the person that wrote it, I don't know if it was Tim Seeley or who it was, but I thought there was a post on Facebook. He said why he introduced certain characters. Like, he showed, because everybody that was shown at the end, we're like, who in the hell are all these people that are now sharing the power of Grayskull with the DC-style He-Man, you know, because he's got to be right here. But, so, apparently Squinch is like, Squinch is an inspiration when he became He-Woe, and they said, well, the reason he had that name is because maybe there was types of speech impediment. I was like, what? When did Squinch ever call Laura Lowa? When did he ever say Nadiwa? I was like, Squinch could talk fine, so why would he be called He-Woe? And then He-Soul was he had one character that was black, one that I think was Latino. Then he had two new females, but he said he introduced He-Soul. He had the idea when he was a kid with, I don't know if it was his brother. He said, we sat down and had a discussion saying, why is it G.I. Joe has all these black characters, but Masters of the Universe doesn't have? They only have Clam Jam. I was like, well, they had Clam Jam, Geldor, Prince Dacon, Malaktha, Garn, Queen Belina. I was like, there was a lot of black characters in Masters of the Universe. So what cartoon was he reading or looking at the mini comics? Or was he somebody that just looked at a figure? So it just shows, like, obviously you weren't researching Masters of the Universe enough. If you did, you see, yes, there have been a lot of black characters in all sorts of races because Masters of the Universe has always been about sharing and everybody being there. So I was like, what cartoon was he watching? So, I mean, but his characters, yes, the idea, if that's his true intention, sure, well, it's great. But I was like, it showed he wasn't looking at Masters.
I thought that He-Soul was based off of that guy that was cosplaying. I thought that I read that somewhere.
No, he just said that he had a discussion with his brother. They said Clamp Champ was the only black character in Masters of the Universe. I was like, you don't know Masters of the Universe.
I don't care who would have appeared right there. If you're gonna like introduce new characters like that, the way that they did.
Oh yeah.
And then they just exist and do this real quick, and then they're gone. Like I have no connection to that. Like you should have done something to have established these characters. Like I don't know, maybe an issue one or something, and then go from there.
Right. That's what I meant, to introduce all these characters. Like I don't know any of these characters, and it doesn't matter what race they are. We don't care. It's like, but who are these characters? Why couldn't you have, you know, just somebody like I think somebody said that in that original the other Masters Universe storyline, the Eternity War, that towards the end of that, He-Man was gonna share his power with all the heroic warriors. So you figured, okay, why didn't he show up with all the heroic warriors that had all the power of Grayskull? It's just, you hit us with too much, but then he said it could be because they're possibly wanting to do something called the He-Force, where it's going to be He-Man and everybody that he introduced, called the He-Force. I was like, it's just all brand new characters. It's,
right here, Zen Brown said He-Soul was a nod to the cosplayer. The cosplayer verified it. Someone's lying somewhere.
Okay, well, Zen Brown, I'm glad you said it, because in Tim Seeley's interview, which I've seen through Facebook, and he had an interview through some comic people, he said he thought of him when he was a kid. Interesting. I didn't know. I'm glad Zen Brown said that, because I do know the cosplayer he's talking about, and that's a cool-ass cosplay.
It goes back to the whole book together. Like, all the ideas were so scatterbrained. And then by the time you get to when these guys show up, I message Joe. I'm like, who the fuck are these people? Did I miss something here? And he's like, no, I don't. This name sounds familiar. Like one out of six. I'm like, oh, all right.
One was a nod to a Forza T figure's name, and yeah, that was it. But I was like, but it still wasn't him. And when I looked at Squinch as He-Man, I was like, oh, and he's Whoa! I was like, oh dear God! Oh, the explanation, the speech impediments, or however they were describing something, was like, oh God! It just shows again the lack of knowledge of Masters. Like, when did Squinch ever talk like that?
So I want to bring this back. It was super refreshing. I'm glad Tyler picked this comic this week, because now you can really see when people care about it and they love the property what they're capable of doing, and the new characters they can introduce and intertwine with what's already there instead of what we've gotten with Multiverse. And Tyler's face says it all. So Joe, let's move on to the next question.
Let's go.
I hate you, Tim Seeley. I hope you hear this. How much I hate you. I hate all your ideas. You stay the hell away from He-Man.
Papa Hood 69.
The rusty fishing book.
All right. And
let's get to
Papa. Once again, whatever. I was gonna say Tim Seeley can send all the hate mail to. I think it's what's the email attached to this account? fansofpower84@gmail.com. Feel free to shoot an email.
All right. Well, here is the question. Fans of Power, from Papa Hoods, Fans of Power, if you could bring Masters of the Universe back to its original glory, how would you go about it? Well, I mean, obviously start with what we knew as being the great story that we grew up with. Yes, you can build upon it, but you don't have to be so far removed where you have to change reasonings of how He-Man got the power, or a damn, you know, five-issue thing of, you know, why Adam was chosen, or any of that. Don't dwell into other things where you're just going to introduce so many new characters where you ignore the other ones. Don't shit all over original characters and make jokes, especially on Mechanic, which they love to do, but just stay with what was always true. Don't have to do a new story. It's like when they were trying to think about the movies. Like, hey, let's Skeletor be somebody that wears a mask that's a skull. You know, like nonsense like that. Just don't go in such a far direction where it's so far removed that you might as well not call it Masters of the Universe. You could call it something else. So it just stay the source material and work with what was good and build on it. But Tyler.
Guys, I'd do it for free. I could come up with the best and most definitive version of He-Man for people. Comic book form, a staff writer, whatever. I don't care if it sounds egotistical or not. I eat, sleep, and breathe this property. I could come up with something that would destroy anybody. I don't care how talented they are at DC. Or I'm just saying, like, it could be done. It could be done so easily because I care about this property inside, outwards, back, inside, out, upside down, whatever. Like, I mean, if you listen to this podcast and you've heard me rant and rave about why this sucks and why this would work better, Nathan has me spitball ideas. Like, it's not me trying to shout out like shitty fanboy fiction. Like there's so much to work with. You don't have to create anything. I mean, there's no reason it has to become all metal, which worries me when Kevin Smith says the designs for the new He-Man characters are metal. I'm like, oh my God. You know, because that's what we need.
That's
the
word I'm
metal.
Well, I thought, even growing up back at that time, I never used that word. Never used that word metal.
Me neither, but I don't want to get sidetracked, but I'm just saying, like, this none of this has to be tampered with. It is already established for us. Like,
exactly. Yep.
You know, just like Empire is better because they took characters that were established in Star Wars A New Hope and took them and expanded the sandbox. You know, that's why people continue to celebrate, you know, Empire or Wrath of Khan or various other films. Like, they didn't need to go and change the mythology, you know, and reinvent the damn wheel. They just took what we already loved and gave us more of it, and not like the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels were, hey, everyone loved Jack Sparrow being all weird and weird. Let's do even more of that to an obscene, obnoxious amount in the sequels, and we'll film at the same time.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that they have a problem with doing, is they take a character, usually, typically, like a side character that a lot of people generally well liked, and then they expand upon that role more, and it just, that's why that character, that's what making that character great, like smaller doses. And shorter, like, you don't have to just have the entire thing revolve around that character. That's why you, the other characters, the other characters were main characters to begin with.
You're talking like that new hero. You got a speech impediment. Thanks, Joe. Look what it rubbed off.
Joe Dunn, yeah. Nah.
Very nice. Well, I know my answer to this right here, and I don't know what Tyler's going to be, but Sean has a question. He said, who from Filmation would you like to have seen back in the MVC comic or in, you know, the 2000X MYP series? And I would say Chakotay and Mask. For me, I would have loved to have seen them in MYP. I would have pissed my pants, but I guess those are maybe my top two.
That was High Hope and in Hero.
Oh, God.
Because when we got kicked in the nuts with the shitty King Grayskull, you know, that. And I think Larry DeTiller not being able to bring Granomir into the show, which I think he had mentioned in one interview, I think when Chris Vint like interviewed him on the Chronicles podcast, I think there was mentioned that he was interested in bringing those characters back, or at least Chakotay. And I'm sure they're like, no, you're not here to have fun. There's a whole, from Negator, there's a ton of Filmation characters that would have done extremely well in the MVC MYP treatment or MVC too. So we could, but yeah, so those are just a few. Because there's tons of others. So
okay, and I want to maybe try to correct myself if Jeff Chiapello in the chat room, he said that Seeley said Heasel was based on the Sunman line, and he said that also Seeley said that he thought of Battle Cat Man when he was a kid. But no, I guess in reference,
I forgot all about Battle Cat Man showing up.
Yeah, but also I know he did say also he said him and his friend or his brother discussed why there were never any black characters but Clamp Champ within Masters of the Universe. And that's why I brought up, well, he was wrong. Because like I said, I said at least eight. And there's even more than that. Like I said, because Masters of the Universe has always been a rich, you know, it's a rich world of everybody of every race. And a plus, all alien races and creatures and fantasy to make you escape into another world. So they've never been about not ever including anybody in Masters of the Universe or She-Ra. Like I said, God, it's always been such a great two properties for showcasing everybody. So Masters of the Universe has always been diverse.
Jeff also had another question for Tyler. What would your opening scene be to a He-Man movie? How would you start your Masters of the Universe film?
I would give a prologue to Grayskull, like of the Planet Attorney, and build up the emphasis of Grayskull before you see any major character. No Skeletor, no Snake Mountain, no Adam, nobody. The prologue, it would be to establish what Attorney is and emphasize why this particular castle, this location, is so important, and that a series of films, an animated series, whatever, revolve around keeping this out of evil's hands. Build up the mystery, like, you know, play up, you know, give the general audience and the fans a little bit of like Easter eggs in terms of like, you know, you show references to certain things of the past, but don't overemphasize it because that's giving too much stuff that really has nothing to do with the story we're going to tell. Much like the Greatest Adventures of All, it's a brief narration of the planet and Grayskull, but really emphasize why it's so important that this castle, you know, should always be left alone or out of evil's hands. Like, because I felt like that's what He-Man, the mythology revolves around keeping Grayskull out of evil's hands from Skeletor, Hordak, King Hiss, whoever, Shigora, doesn't matter who it is. Like, everyone wants this castle. So that needs to be the focal point to an audience who's never seen it or knows not much of it or is vague recollections of it. This is what the goal is this location here. Because without that, then the struggle means nothing.
I like that.
And there's been some comments that you and Joe need to collaborate together on a story. And we gotta.
Yeah, we'll do that. Like I said, whoever the fuck
was drawing it for years, it's just hard to, you know, we don't
get somebody to draw it.
Yeah, which we gladly get Kevin to do it, but Kevin's wrapped up with his own stuff, and things like
which
that.
Which he did on. He really hit his goals and surpassed and got a lot of stretch goals. So congratulations to Kevin. Definitely. That was fantastic.
It's good for people to tell us that. It's that we're not just, you know, people sitting in our homes, you know, being fanboys and bitching about this and complaining about that. Like, you know, like, you know, with like, we're legitimate in our stuff. I mean, I puke at the idea of like people. Puke. And that's what Tim Seeley is. He is puke. Like, so someone put a graphic of the Ghostbusters logo, like with the circle with the line with Tim Seeley in it. You know, he's become the Antichrist of He-Man. Not literally Antichrist, but just like, it's like, just stop it, man. You know, go draw a bathroom stall, but stay away from He-Man.
If there was gonna be a PowerCon this year, and we were gonna go, Val would probably hit us up and be like, hey, on second thought, you might want to stay away. Just
never mind.
Believe me, if anybody of any importance in Mattel or DC has ever stumbled across this podcast, I have pretty much sealed my fate, you know, in terms of ever being able to contribute on a professional level anywhere because of being so vocal and ugly about this stuff. But I'm like, Mattel, I treasure this property with all my heart, and I don't want to see anybody destroy it. I don't care whose son or uncle or cousin is related to the people making the decision that you put in charge of writing this stuff. It deserves better, and the fans deserve better. Like, I swear I would do it for free. I would devote my time from my full – I mean, instead of working a full-time job, I would devote my efforts for free to ensure that something legitimate and nothing but the purest quality was put out there for people to watch, listen, or read. I swear I would.
It'd definitely all be out of love. I'll tell you that. It would be out of love. So, well, this question from Mike Champ, this is one that you won't – probably get an answer from Tyler, and for me it'll be slightly different. He said, how would you all feel if Origins included the Forza T characters? Well, that's the thing, they're not going to be able to. I mean, would it be cool for fans who loved it? Sure. Yeah, I mean, it would be cool.
Honestly, I would rather them throw that in there instead of like, yes, the articulate figures, they look nice, but damn it, it's just buying the same figures over again. And honestly, I wanted Forza T in Classic, which I still need to get Joe to make Carnival for me.
I could do it. And, you know, I was for some reason convinced at one time I thought it was going to happen. I don't know why, but I don't know. That's something with
Axel threw in Felinor, I think, and one of his
one of the mini comics, right?
Well, no, it was one of the PowerCon prints too. The one that had the that was Slamurai and the Snake Armor troops. I think Feliner is in the background of one of those, or in that.
So
I think. But Nathan, they are expensive as hell. I've never owned one. I thought I came close to buying a set from someone. Of course you do, Joe.
No. Here's the weird story.
It's laying right here next to me.
Well, yes. I mean, it's up
next
there.
To his body over here.
No, it's up there. And like I said, I'm sure you're going to get plenty of cool customs for it, Mike Champ, but I just don't think official. But when I first started getting online and learning of the internet and learning of eBay, that's when I seen them. I was like, what are these things? They're cool. They're about $20 each. They got the whole set. I'm going to get them all. And then as the years gone by with everything, things have just skyrocketed in prices. You want to hear one that's so ridiculous? My buddy John Itis posted a link of something that sold today on eBay. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. An empty Eternia box from Europe. Empty Eternia box from Europe. You know what this sold for? $910 for a box. Not even, I was like, what? What is
that?
That's
a beautiful box, though, man. I mean,
well, I mean, but this one, it's even got damage all around it, around the corners and stuff. I'm looking at it right now, but I was like, 910? I was like, Jesus. I mean, I know that at one time, you know, years back when you first got on eBay, you could get, you know, a box one. You might be lucky if you got it for $1,500, $1,900. So I'm wondering, man, what's a complete boxed one, you know, with everything in it? What would that go for? But when I seen 910 for a box, prices on He-Man stuff really has skyrocketed. Yep.
On everything.
Yeah. My wallet's been taking a beating lately, getting more classics figures. Like, I mean, just...
But Nathan just keeps getting back up and keeps taking more punches. Like, he can say what he wants, but he's got the Rocky Balboa mentality.
Yeah, there you go.
He'll go all 15 rounds with Mattel.
There you go, the Rocky Balboa of collecting classics figures in 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you have, Nathan, one more question you can read, because we could about wrap it up now, but read one more question, then I'll thank everybody in the chat room. But
I don't,
if you got one more question, you can
read. I don't really see anything.
Give us one more question, somebody in the chat room. Don't ask us what our favorite He-Man teapot is or some shit like that.
They didn't make a He-Man teapot.
No, I didn't, but I'm just making that up.
Sorry, I was just drinking water there.
It's almost like we were talking about Karg again for a second, huh?
Sorry, no, because I missed half the chat.
Just lost, you know, interest there.
No, it's just everything in the chat when I do it, I miss a lot of stuff. So I'm just waiting to see within 30 seconds if one more question pops up. Like, that's it, 30 more seconds. If a question comes up, then cool. If not, then I'll wrap it up and thank everybody in the chat room. Because I didn't think, I didn't acknowledge you guys at the beginning, since we had our 1-2 strikes and got on a third. I was like, it wasn't even in my head to do that.
Yeah,
I'll
just have to keep all of this just a plain design moving forward. Just names and stuff like that. I won't try to work too much. I won't try to get too fancy with it.
Grim's kind of teasing us. He says, what would you hope to see in Masters of the Universe 85, the stuff that they are working on for I don't know what you guys are going to have planned. I don't know if you're going to do a lot of fan art that's going to be like stuff based off of the cartoon, bringing maybe characters like, you know, Scarecrow, Ninja into like fake little images or, you know, of Filmation, if you're going to do stuff in an homage to early mini comics. I have no clue, but I have faith in you. Grimbot, James, I know you guys are going to do whatever you have planned justice, so I'm just ready to eat it all up.
And you've already put that it's, like, unofficial and will be on social media, so hopefully that gets you through the...
Which is great. This is labor of love for free, and they're giving it right here on Facebook and probably other social media. I'm sure we'll see it on Instagram and Twitter, too, and James will be discussing that next week, and he'll have some cool stuff he'll show probably here, maybe that he won't show online, but of course then he'll show it online after. But there'll be a lot of fun stuff, so it'll be fun to have James on here next week, so make sure you all tune in for that episode. It'll be great.
Daniel in the chat said, is Tyler going to complete his Eternia playset? That Central Tower is like, it's hard to find for a good price, so you just have to pick and choose and hope that you get to it first. Because some people want way more, some people will pop it up and it's a decent price, or, you know, you've already bought it before on eBay and the seller lied to you about sending it to you and said that it got lost in the mail and then tried to resell it again as a complete set.
We ripped
asshole.
Him.
You're an asshole.
He got destroyed in the groups, too, after he did that. That guy, yeah, he got destroyed.
Good.
He messed up
he
bad.
He deserves it.
Which is, yeah, you don't do that. It's selling something, oh,
shit.
What's going on, and then trying
don't
to resell
with
it
me.
For more.
There we go.
That's right. Don't have Nathan come after
I'll
you.
I'll do the motto but hand gestures.
That's right. You
know
what that shit
is. You know, I hadn't thought about that in a while, so I'm glad that we brought that up, because it kind of got me hot for a second. All right, go
there
ahead,
you go.
Joe.
All upset. Well, everybody in the chat room, we hope you had a great time. It was great interacting with all of you. It was fun. Hope you loved it as much as we did. And I just want to say to anybody new to this podcast, make sure that you like, subscribe, share, ring the bell so you can always get notified. And, of course, we got our audio version too, Nathan, that you got to bring up all the time when I forget.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the links down there because we had to restart the show a couple times, but I'll have the links there. You can go to Podbean if you want to download audio. We're on Anchor FM. You can find us there. If that's too much for you, go to fanspower.com. That'll take you to the Pop Culture Network site. We got the link to Tyler's Leech mini comic that he wrote. We got Joe's mask that you can download. Got a link so you can buy some of Joe's t-shirts. We got the link so you hit him up for a custom. Join our Facebook group. I think I got everything. That's
good, you did. And I'm going to go jump in the damn freezer right after this. So until next time, have a powerful day.
I didn't mean to call you Meatloaf Jack.
I'm so bad at the movie quotes.
Did you say it
but
again?
I have to think about Tyler's tendencies and what he watches, and I know that he watches like a lot of the same handful of movies.
Big Trouble Little China? I don't know.
No, and I haven't watched this movie like I think I watched it like back in March, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's not something I've watched like recently.
I know, but
is that what you said?
I didn't mean to call you Meatloaf.
But I know
Jack.
That Tyler, like, I know what Tyler watches. I've seen his DVD collection, and I know that he doesn't. It's not like he's watching new stuff. It's like he's going back to old favorites.
Well, if they were making good new stuff, I would watch new stuff, but they don't.
That's true.
Surprisingly, nobody has got it in the chat room, so you're going to have to tell us. Usually JSP gets it every time, but what is this movie?
An American Werewolf in London.
Yep. And Papa Hoods brings up really quick, 500 subscribers. Yeah, we surpassed that, so thank you guys for doing all that.
Yeah, thank you again.
And Curtis Ackerman, the shirt, where did I get it? Got it made. My mom's got one of those Cricut machines, and we just print out the iron-on vinyl and slap it on a T-shirt.
There you go.
All right.
Well, I'm hot as hell. I'll see you guys next week.